All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 812-333-2665. We've got a short show tonight. We're going to turn it over to Reds baseball at 6:30. They're home to the Braves. We'll pick them back up on Friday at Minnesota, 8 o'clock. But it's a short week for us as they've got some specials going on and some early starts. So we're out at 6:30, only half an hour with you tonight. And plenty to cover as the NFL draft starts tomorrow night. Colts right now with the number 6 pick and quite a few others as Chris Ballard has turned the number 3 pick into more picks, several second-round picks. So doing a good job there. And there's always a potential trading down. We'll talk about that in the second segment. But first, Game 5 tonight for the Indiana Pacers. Tied up 2-2 with the Cleveland Cavaliers going back to Cleveland as both teams have split on each other's floor. The Cavs back to home court advantage for the final three games. And here are the Pacers on the road in a tough spot against a team and at least a player who's used to closing these games out or these series out when he can. Can't do it tonight. He's going to have to do it either on the Pacers floor or back home. But how do the Pacers get out of Cleveland with the 3-2 lead is the ultimate question here, because that's what they certainly want to do. And you got to think the first step is keep LeBron James from going absolutely nuts on you. We talked the other day, it's been about slow starts for the Pacers in every game except for game one. This would be a nice time to get back to a quick start.
Yeah, find out what you did in game one and how it worked, and that was a pretty simple formula. It was not let LeBron James go crazy. And, yeah, it sounds so simple to do on paper, but when you discuss one of the best basketball players ever, well, there's a reason why he hasn't lost any first-round series usually when he faces maybe some different competition. Remember how well the Pacers played them last year, lost, what, four games by a total of 16 points. So it's not like there's something that you're going to find in film this afternoon and be like, aha!
Two completely different teams, it does have that history from just last year.
It is, and the good point about it is they know they can win on the floor. I think that's part of the issue. It's not one of those deals where they walk in and the first question is going to be, well, you haven't won here in 19 consecutive trips. You're not dealing with that. You're dealing with a team that's been in a pretty good puncher's chance with the LeBrons, because, you know, well, there's not a lot of other guys on Cleveland sometimes that step up and help there.
Yeah.
The other theory is if LeBron goes after you early, you got to stay with him. It can't be that 18-point, 17-point, 16-point
right,
lead.
19-3.
Well, yeah, or whatever, 26-8, and he's got 19 of them, or whatever that combination was. I don't have a problem with LeBron going out early, because I hope that wears him down later. It seems like he never does, quote-unquote, wear down, but that's if he's got to work all 46 minutes, if he's going to play 46 minutes, that's better than him getting to cruise the entire third quarter because the lead's 17, and you're hoping the Pacers, you know, as a Pacer fan, you're hoping the Pacers make a run. But he doesn't have to bust it in the third quarter if they get that big lead, and then he's ready to go in the fourth. So I think the Pacers have to do three things tonight that's really simple that they can control. They have to make really good decisions with the basketball. This cannot be a Victor, I'm sorry, I was 5-for-20. I'm going to go out and win this by myself. That has not been a way the Pacers have won basketball games this year. In the first game, they were all over the glass, and they were all over transition. They were getting easy points. They were running out. They were making Cleveland chase. So if there are missed shots, you can't have Kevin Love grabbing 9 offensive rebounds and J.R. Smith tipping the ball out and Larry Nance Jr. jumping over everybody. So you can't make bad decisions with the basketball. You've got to get good shots, and you can't give Cleveland multiple chances on the offensive end. You've got to make them work for it. And if they have to work through it all through LeBron James, like I said, force them to make jumpers. I think that's been the thing. 0-for-5 in game 4 from the three-point line. I know he can make as many as he takes. I understand that. But I know in the post from 3 feet away, he's really hard to stop. I'd rather have him shooting jumpers. So if you can – the Pacers defense is going to have to find a way again to limit his effectiveness. I don't think you shut him down. I don't think you slow him down. I don't think you stop him. You just have to put him into situations where if the two best options are maybe him taking a jumper or him straight line driving on bogey,
easy.
Well, that's probably – you're going to probably have to take that away and make somebody else make some shots to beat you.
Victor Oladipo in the first two games was 20 of 37. He had 54 points in the last two games, both of them in Indianapolis. He played 80 minutes, which was significantly more than the first two games. 10 of 35 for 35 combined points. he struggled more shooting at home than he did on the road. I don't know that you look into where it was necessarily, but probably more so how Cleveland's defending him. And again, I asked this question, you know, before, after game one, what does the pressure look like on Vic, a guy who's not used to being a focus in the NBA on a consistent basis like a LeBron James is? You know, there are guys that are used to being that since the minute they walk in the door. Vic hasn't had to do that yet. So you're Victor Oladipo, you're Nate McMillan. What do you tell Vic tonight to try to be tonight so that he's not trying to do too much, but at the same time, you know, doing enough to show his team that he's going to carry him where it matters?
I think Victor can help his team by taking good shots. I think if he's worried about, as you saw a little bit in game four, at least that's what I thought I saw, I thought he was more worried about getting calls than he was making plays. I think he's got to make plays tonight. I don't think you can worry about on the road. You think to yourself, well, I'm not going to get the call anyhow.
Right.
So just go make the play.
But going to the basket, I mean, that's his strength. I think you can live with him being aggressive, going to the basket, and whatever happens out of that, more so than just quick turn, you know, pull up jumpers all night long.
Exactly right. So you have to get him in situations where he can have an option to attack the basket. And sometimes bringing the ball up, a high screen and roll. You've seen the jump. You've seen the blitz, as Tyronn Lue likes to call it, where you force them wide at 35 feet, and all of a sudden everything breaks down, and then the Pacers are scrambling for it. So maybe keep the ball out of his hands a little bit on the set offensive side of things. But in transition, he's the guy you want. No one's going to beat him up and down the court.
Yeah.
So, again, getting out in transition, getting easier baskets instead of getting late clock jumpers. Well, Cleveland's going to defend as well. They get to watch film and do all this. But I think he has to be smart. He can't get into a one-on-one battle with LeBron about, you know, who's going to score the most points or anything like that. That's the next step you hope he found from watching game four film. It was, hey, look at this. You have this opportunity here. Why'd you take a jumper? You had Love on you. Go beat Love.
Mm-hmm.
You get in there, because that gives everybody something to think about. All of the nine guys on the floor got to think when he's got the ball isolated on a wrong matchup. So try to get him in those wrong matchups. Maybe instead of, you know, it's been the big – The small switch seems to be more the jump than the big switch. The big switch seems to be more the switch when they go Turner and Oladipo on pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
That's the small and big and big and small.
Yeah.
When they do guards, that seems to be more the trap or the blitz on some of that. Now, I haven't watched enough film to tell you that happens every time.
Yeah.
But what you have to do, the ball's got to move. Can't be set. You can't wait and try to dribble through double teams, force things through it, because that's exactly what Cleveland wants you to do. They want the ball out of his hands, so that would be the number one priority for their defense tonight. How do we get the ball out of Victor's hands or force Victor into bad decisions? Because we saw late in the game against Kevin Love one-on-one, he decided to take step-back jumpers, which he can make them. He can make any shot he wants to take. I don't have a problem with that. But they baited him into a play late in that game where it was him one-on-one with Love, or him one-on-one off a screen roll, and he went to the side of the court. It was only Thad Young. We talked about this on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what Cleveland wants. So he has to just say, well, I'm open for a reason. So either I have to attack and keep going, or I've got to find a better way to get other guys involved here, because that's going to be the tough part. I don't think one guy beats Cleveland.
Yeah.
I think you need that seven guys in double figures like the Pacers had in game four. You just need a better closing stretch. Guys got to make shots.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. You can pass the ball to the open guy all night long, but if Bogdanović goes 2-for-11 from three, the Pacers are going to struggle.
Yeah, and not that the playoff hopes ride solely on Darren Collison, but this is a guy that was the best three-point shooter in the league. He was a 47% from three all year long. He's at 27% here in the playoffs. Same thing with just his shooting in general. He's a 50% shooter all year long. He's at 36% in the playoffs. I mean, he's an example of what you need to get better out of your other guys if you want Victor's moves and his attention to make a difference. Because, you know, getting double teamed only, you know, helps the Pacers if Vic gets it to somebody who can help him make a shot, to make a bucket, whatever it ends up being. And they're not doing that consistently enough.
Yep, and they'll have to live with if Turner's hurting him, or if Sabonis is hurting him, or if Thad's hurting him, or Bogey's going to knock down some shots. They're going to have to adjust to that, and hopefully that will make Victor give him more space to operate. And I think that's going to be the key. But in the Pacers' defense as well, you have to play better sound down and distance time and space stuff. You can't lose Korver. You can't You can't take a nap in the half court and give them layups because you're overcommitting to LeBron. You have to play really good basketball to beat the Cavaliers. I mean, that's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any gimmick defense you can throw at them or gimmick offense you can throw at them. You've just got to grind it out, and you have to make plays down the stretch, and everybody has to make plays. They can rely on LeBron. I haven't seen enough from Victor in that situation you're talking talking about, to say every time down the court in a two-point game, we can just go to Oladipo. He's not as dynamic as LeBron, and that's not a knock on Victor. LeBron is that good. LeBron can post. LeBron can dribble. LeBron can do it. He can do everything. And that's why he's one of the best players ever. So for the Pacers, take care of the ball. Get good shots. Get everybody involved. Be hard to guard. And that'll help keep them in the game, hopefully. But if they dig a hole one more time, Dave, we're not going to sit here next Monday and say, well, that was great. I can't believe they came back from another 17-point deficit on the road and almost won. That's not going to be the case.
Well, we will have an answer on this series on Monday, as the games 6 and 7 are Friday and Sunday. And to note, again, Cleveland scored 80 points in Game 1 when the Pacers won in Cleveland. They've scored 97, 90, and 104 in the other three games. So, I mean, there's a trend there. I'm not sure you're always going to keep them in the 80s, but try your damnedest because you got a better chance there. Got to take a quick break. We'll talk a little Colts and NFL draft when we get back. And, again, we're leaving at 6:30. So we're tuned back in, and we'll have Reds baseball for you here shortly. You're in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
If you're looking for a new quote on your home or auto, let Skip Daly with Weathervane Insurance help you shop dozens of carriers. Find Skip and Weathervane Insurance at insurancebloomington.com.
812-333-2665 is the phone number. NFL draft starts tomorrow night, 8 o'clock for round one. Rounds two and three are Friday night. And rounds four through seven are on Saturday, and that starts at noon on Saturday. Colts with the originally with the number three pick, of course, after their stellar 2017 season, rather. But they have traded back and now have the number six pick, rather, in the first round. I think everybody kind of understands with this draft that quarterbacks are going to be a premium at the top of the draft like they normally are, and the Colts don't feel that they need a quarterback. We could talk until we're blue in the face about that one, but if Andrew Luck's healthy, you stick with Andrew Luck. I don't think there's any question. That is the only question, is he healthy? But now all of a sudden, the Colts have three second-round picks this year. They picked up an additional second-rounder next year from the Jets as part of that trade back, and then a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh pick this year. Rumors are maybe Chris Ballard will trade back again. Rumors are he could take anybody under the sun at number six. I think everybody would love to see the most talented guy in the draft fall to the Pacers at number six. Who knows who that is and who that'll be? Is that Saquon Barkley? Is that Bradley Chubb? Is that a guard? Is that a corner? Is that a linebacker? But I think most people think that the Colts can also trade back another six, eight, 10 spots and get a pretty darn good football player and pick up even more picks. And this team has a lot of needs.
Well, it does. Now. But there's two questions here, and I think that are very valid to ask. Number one, they do have plenty of needs. So that's, I guess, I don't want to say the cop-out. But do you want a bunch of really good guys, or do you need a franchise-type player at a position, regardless of the position, where it's a guy you don't have to draft that position over and over for the next 10 years?
Right.
We've seen multiple guys in the second and third round that have been nice players, but they've been nice players.
Yeah.
The Colts, when you're talking about all pros or all Pro Bowl guys, it's been who? McAfee and Vinatieri.
Yeah.
And McAfee's been gone for a year.
I think we got a T.Y. Hilton year or two.
Yeah, yeah. T.Y. leads the league in receiving yards almost annually. So that's – never mind. That's a good pick. Mm-hmm. But you can't have T.Y. by himself.
Right.
Right now it's T.Y. and Chester.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's it. Jack Doyle's a nice player at tight end. You've gone
through like six tight ends.
You've gone through. You've got one from the Lions as well. So that's the good news, I guess. You've got some players at some positions. But when you look at the Colts' defense, do you have an edge rusher? No. You haven't replaced that position.
No.
Do you have a linebacker at any of the three positions? They're going to play 3-4 now, right? So any of the four positions.
4-3.
So they're back to 4-3. So any of the three linebacker positions where you say, well, we don't have to worry about that guy for 8 years.
Right.
You don't have that anywhere except maybe Malik Hooker in your defensive backfield.
Yeah.
And he's coming off a major injury.
I mean, you got a couple guys in the backfield that are interesting for you.
Yeah.
I mean, you like the young guys.
Good guys.
Right, but Clayton Gathers, you got Hooker, hopefully
exactly.
Recovers.
But the point about drafting 15, 16, 17, if you're going to move it down again to get more picks, is you get another guy that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You don't get a guy that you say, that's a cornerstone of our defense. When you're bad in the NFL, they give you a chance to get better really, really quickly.
Yeah.
Because you, if you pick second or third in the first round, you pick third in the second round, third in the third round, third. Mm-hmm. So you're getting a chance essentially at the third best player in some, in your opinion, each round. You have to find a guy that can play.
Yeah.
And the worst thing about the draft is, who's ever had a bad draft? Who's ever going to?
Well, nobody that night.
Well, you, that's the point. You come in Monday. Yeah. Oh, look at this.
Yeah, he was a top guy on our board. This is and we love him.
Yeah, and he worked out great for us.
Absolutely.
And look at this film. Yeah. It's like watching a kid. It's a, like watching a YouTube of an AAU kid.
He goes to church every Sunday.
Guy's never had a turnover.
Builds orphanages.
He's never missed a shot.
Yeah. He doesn't even want a salary anymore.
But that's the whole deal. Who cares about winning the draft? You want to win football games. And how do you win football games? Do you do it with a lot of really good guys and hope a couple of them make that breakout?
Yeah.
What I don't want to happen, it can happen with even really good players, but what you want to take the risk out is you don't want to buy low and hope TJ Green turns into a great player someday in the second round pick.
Right, exactly.
We've done enough of that. Yeah. Get some guys that can play now.
Right.
Get some guys that are going to give you 14 or 15 games next year that get it quick and can step in physically and play and can contribute to a team that stinks.
Well, the interesting thing right now is the person that, or the player that is seemingly most obvious as falling to number six to the Colts right now is an offensive guard from Notre Dame, Quentin Nelson. And this is not a position that anybody gets excited about drafting in the top 10 of the NFL draft. No fans do, no coaches do. You know, if he's a stud, he's a stud, and I get that, and that's where you rely on the guys. But when you look at it afterwards, you don't go, yeah, man, we just got that interior lineman way up there that we're going to pay a bunch of money to. That's not usually where most of your money goes. If he's that good, he's that good, and you take him. But you get the sense here that the Colts don't want to be kind of shoehorned into an offensive guard in that spot, that they want to look for more value out of that spot. And that's why you keep hearing about them possibly even falling down or, pulling back even further and trying to pick up more picks, is that they see guys that are still in that 10 to 12 to 14 range that they feel pretty damn comfortable with. Maybe they're on the other side of the ball, but that they feel comfortable with. And some of those extra draft picks will give them the value to match that up.
Yeah. If you want safety in numbers, which I think the Colts can make an argument for because they have so many holes to plug, I can live with that. They've already moved once.
Right.
They've already gotten out of the spot for basically choosing anybody they want, because everybody in America knows now one and two is going, for the most part.
And they moved with something that still has a lot of value in number six.
Yeah, because that's how the little board works out. When you move, you're getting a ton of value for where you're moving to. But the issue is, can they have to find a player that is going to contribute now.
Yeah.
They can't have – this can't be
– project. It can't be a project.
Yeah, it can't be year two of the four-year rebuild. This is Ballard's second draft, and he went through this last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought in Hooker, a safety, great.
That's right.
You needed help at that position. Okay, fine, got it. You got some other guys that are coming along, and now you've switched your defense, and you think these guys are going to be better in this defense. Well, quit thinking about guys. Get somebody who can play. Because the Colts need it at so many spots. I think that's the issue. If they want safety in numbers and they get a lot of okay guys, well, that's fine. But if you're talking about going from 6 to 14 and then you get 27 and whatever else to go with it, are you getting a Pro Bowl guy there? I can't answer that, and I don't think they can answer that right now. Are you guaranteed at 6 getting somebody who is going to be a 10-year starter in this league? And I think that's the question they're going to answer, because if they stay at 6, I think you know your answer. And if they move out, they're going to tell you that they think that they'd rather have more picks.
Nobody in last year's draft set the world on fire. You got rid of your top fourth-round draft pick, offensive tackle Zach Banner. Malik Hooker got hurt and was hurt coming in to begin with, and then got hurt again and was out for the year. Quincy Wilson, he couldn't show up on the field for a while. And eventually got some time late. I know they like him, but that's not helping. Terrell Basham never really made much of an impact. Third-round draft pick.
He moves back to his natural position now because they changed defense.
So maybe you get more out of him there. Marlon Mack is probably your best bet out of all that. Nate Hairston had a nice season as a fifth-round draft pick. I mean, so you got no complaints there. But you don't have anybody that stands out in that draft.
No, and when you talk about guard, you look at the Colts' offensive line for the last 5 years. Besides Costanzo, there has been a turnstile at every position.
A lot of injuries, no question.
A lot of injuries, a lot of whiff draft picks, guys that were only playing because they were the last guys not hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, at some point, And I'm. This is what makes the draft fascinating, is to kind of see the blueprint of what Chris Ballard thinks this team needs, or how he's going to shape that need moving forward. Because the one thing that he has said a million times is, we're not doing this through free agency.
Yeah,
we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it that way. So you're going to do it through the draft, and I don't know where you start. You've got a guy that's not even throwing the football that's going to be your quarterback. Mm-hmm. Do you need guys to protect him because he's got a problem that could resurface again? Do you have a running game that can take the pressure off that guy and that line? Mm-hmm. There are so many questions. It almost drives you bonkers.
That's just it. I mean, there are so many questions to be answered about what the Colts need and spots that they need them. So, you know, it's one of those things where you've got a lot of options. You're not shoehorned into quarterback where you got to be aggressive to do something like some of these other teams right now, going up to trade up to get somebody that they don't have any idea if that guy's going to be a franchise quarterback or not. That seems like the toughest position of all. So, you know, again, if you read the tea leaves at all, they certainly sound like they want to trade back again. Is the sound of it. Now, hope you know, you never know. I mean, they could be throwing up a smoke screen. I don't know. I'm a defensive guy generally, so, you know, I love the looks of some of these linebackers and corners that come later on, you know, in the late early first round, if you will, that 8, 10, 12 picks, whatever those are. But this is where Chris Ballard, you know, is going to make his hay. But Ryan Grigson was not able to do so after year one.
But you have to remember as well, Chris Ballard's hay could be made for him because other teams could move on him. You could be the best laid plan, so to speak.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden Buffalo trades their entire franchise and move up to three and turns the draft upside down.
But the bad part and the good part for the Colts, the nice part for the draft is that there's guys at a lot of positions that can fill a need for the Colts. So if you trade back to a 10 or 12, you don't have to say we have to have a linebacker. And if those two guys are gone, you're screwed. Because, there's other corners that are going to fall if that happens.
There's
a wide receiver or running back that could be there. You never know.
There are. But then you always scratch your head and say, well, why are they moving up to get that guy? Is he really that good? And then are we just getting what's left? Because you started at three. And if you come out of this at 16 with four second-round picks, four third-round picks, and half those guys don't pan out, then that's the interesting other side of this.
The first round will be fascinating for Colts fans because you've got about an hour to figure out what Chris Ballard's going to do. And it could be trading back. It could be trading then right back up a couple of spots. It could be continuing to trade back. You just don't know what might be available because people are that desperate for some of these quarterbacks in particular up there.
And there's plenty of quarterbacks. That's the other interesting part. So if somebody jumps up in front of six and pulls the quarterback out to go get one and that bumps everybody back, maybe you stay there and you think, hey, this guy's going to fall to us. But that's what makes it captivating. That's what makes the NFL draft watchable. I think I saw a draft board. Somebody said the last 1,800 picks, four picks got correctly picked in order.
Quick, stay, get the guard, drop, and get a linebacker or a corner.
I wouldn't mind a linebacker. I think you've got to have somebody who can make plays on defense.
I like a couple of these linebackers that they're projecting in that area if you fall back a few. So I say you fall back a bit. Nobody loves a guard at number six. Hey, folks, music means we got to head on out of here. We'll be back Monday, so tune in then. Don't go anywhere. Reds baseball. You've been in the zone.